I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Yoni Leiser. He is writer and director of the documentary film William S. Burroughs, A Man Within, which opens at the CCA here in Santa Fe this Friday at 6 o'clock. And Kathleen Great joins me here in the Santa Fe Baking Company. She's a film and music producer. She was a friend and associate of William Burroughs. Welcome, both of you, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Yoni, William Burroughs was an iconic, influential character of the 20th century, literary scene, art scene. He had a crazy, wild, intense life. What drew you to make a film about him?
Well, I first learned about him in my early teenage years, and I grew up in the suburbs, and I had a lot of difficulty, and I couldn't really relate to anyone that I had been into, any writers or people I had been introduced in school there. And I moved to the city, and a friend gave me a copy of Naked Lunch, and I was around 14, 15 then, and it blew my mind. That was my, like, diving point into punk rock, literature that I've been into ever since, into, you know, surrealist art, everything that kind of helped me and helped me through self-actualization. But it all started with Naked Lunch, which was such a crazy and interesting diving point. So I guess that's how I initially got involved in his work.
William Burroughs was from an upper-class Midwestern family. He went to private schools. He went to Harvard. How did he become a part of the beat poetry movement with Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and that early kind of drug culture that he was involved in?
You should Kathleen knew him, Kathleen, you can ask that question?
Well, actually, William maybe was the so-called founder of the Beat Generation. So he was their mentor. He was Kerouac's mentor and Ginsberg and so on. He never considered himself a beat writer. He considered the label beat to be a marketing term. He was he considered himself a free thinker, maybe a radical thinker in the sense that radical means root. He was trying to go back to the root of ideas that created civilization. So he was a writer, and he was very close with Ginsberg and Kerouac and, you know, Gregory Corso and all of that, and it became to be known as the Beat Generation.
Well, this is, and I'm not sure which one of you wants to answer this, but in witnessing Burroughs, and here he is from this patrician family, is the word that's used in the film, and one sort of wonders whether he was rebelling against it or whether he just was kind of cut from a different cloth in the first place.
Well, he, he was from the American Midwest, and he was from St. Louis, which was the home of T.S. Eliot, and I think he identified himself less as from a patrician background. He was from the Burroughs family, of the Burroughs adding machine and so on, but the fortune, you know, that fortune had been made. He wasn't technically an heir. He never would have inherited money from it. I think he related much more to the essential impulses in American culture, the Walt Whitman, the Thoreau, the Emerson, and that rather than this patrician side. He never considered himself, I don't believe, as an outsider, nor do I. He was a part of a very complex American culture. And On the Road, Kerouac's On the Road, kind of harkened back to Whitman's Song of Myself. They considered themselves essence Americans. And, in some ways, yes, he was a rebel, but he was a rebel in the sense that he was really searching for his individuality and where his conscience lay.
We're talking about the film William S. Burroughs, A Man Within. Yoni, you feature in the film wonderful interviews with John Waters and Patti Smith and a lot of poets and artists and musicians commenting on his life. And what's striking to me is, and you say this yourself about your own life, is the incredible range of influence that Burroughs had. He was born nearly a century ago, that he had on generations of younger artists. And I was wondering if you could tell us more about that.
Well, I was just saying, it's interesting how history is saved and passed on through generations and preserved, especially, I think, in America. So I think I've met people who, I was saying I met yesterday, who talked about William Burroughs, and the only reference he had of him is his appearance in Gus Van Sant's movie Drugstore Cop. And it was so interesting to me that that was the only reference point that he had ever had to William Burroughs. But because of that, because of my film, you know, he's starting to learn about him. And so many people I knew, you know, learned about him through punk rock bands that they liked that talked about him. But I think it's connected to the whole idea of, I don't know, oral history or passing on, you know, influence. But I think it's important for people to have kind of a recorded history within their own artwork and pass that on. I've always been interested in creatively documenting history and a history that's important, that's personally important. So I think that is pervasiveness in mainstream culture and underground culture and middle ground culture has been, you know, very important.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that he has longevity, and Yoni, I do agree with your point of oral history, which is not often valued as much as it is important, as the transmission between person to person is really key in the transmission of culture. But your subtitle is The Man Within, and, you know, often Burroughs is known, yes, punk rock, the drugstore cowboy, heroin, homosexuality, but there was a lot that he also wrote. I would suggest an alternate would be The Man Behind the Mirror, because he really was reflecting the morbidity of the culture in many of his artistic expressions with gallows humor, if I might say so. But his premise was that really there's something basically wrong with civilization. There's a deep and profound sleep in the civilized world, and the proof is war. So he, you know, in his artistic output, he really reflected that and how morbid that impulse that ultimately leads to war can be. But the man himself is quite different that you portray so beautifully in your film.
He was one of the first people, I guess, to be really explicit about his homosexuality, but he also, as the film brings out, I find this fascinating, he really was not at all interested in being part of a queer culture either. How did he deal with his sexuality in a time when it was taboo to even mention the word, much less to be a queer man out in society?
Well, I think, like, you know, I faced some of the similar things growing up queer in you know, the 90s and 2000s, but I was nowhere near as tough as it must have been, you know, for him. I think he opened up so many kind of doors for people to cross over, and it was his writing and his approach to it was so unsafe and so unwholesome. And I noticed, you know, today within the kind of gay queer, maybe not necessarily using the word queer culture, because I think that's more appropriate, but the kind of mainstream gay culture that it's kind of just wanting to be assimilated into quote-unquote normal culture, and like we're normal, but, you know, we happen to be this thing. I think he defied all boundaries. So why, I don't think there was anything, you know, normal. I hate using the word normal, and it's a totally horrible word to use, but there was nothing, I guess, constrictive or conformist about him. He didn't want to, you know, conform, whereas I think a lot of quote-unquote gay culture does. It's important to be dangerous, and, you know, him, Jean Genet, were kind of able to talk about sexuality in this kind of, extreme deconstructionist, transgressive way, which I did too, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Remember that Naked Lunch and Ginsberg's Howl were two of the last books, if not the last two books in the United States that were censored. And One of the ways that William got around what Mary Charlotte was asking about, this kind of anti-gay thing, was he left the United States. He went to Tangier and so on, and ultimately he came back. There's the to be labeled as a part of a gay culture is like woman's culture, pre-suffragette movement. He wanted to be considered not a gay writer, but a writer. You don't have black writers or woman writers or any kind of so-called minority writers. He wanted to be known as a writer and an individual and a human, and he was a great human.
I think it's an interesting point that you were making before, is there have been, up through the present, kind of different strains in so-called gay culture. One is, let's be like mainstream in every way. You used the word unwholesome before. Let's be wholesome and just do what everybody else does, but we're gay and not straight, but we're basically the same. Versus this, let's really do something else. Let's be transgressive and point out difference and use this as a point of departure to look at what's crazy about the society we're living in.
It's interesting, though. You see, like, within his work, he was able to, when I read Naked Lunch, when I read Queer, and I was just shocked. I hadn't read things like that. And when I found out it was written in the 50s, I was blown away, because in the 50s, it was illegal to be those things, you know? But I think, I think that's a big part of who he was, and a big part of, how he influenced people. But you see in his personal life, and I'm not so sure he was all that comfortable, so I think growing up that way, he wasn't able to shed all that much. I mean, Kathleen, you knew him, but I don't think he kind of was ever in a quote unquote happy relationship, right?
I don't know. I can't say that for sure. I believe that his relationship with his second wife, he considered happy.
Whom he shot in a moment of drunken stupidity.
Yeah, and when I first met him, I met him here in New Mexico when he accepted an invitation to be the first speaker for an ecological institute on language as a control system was his subject. But one of the first things I wanted to know when I met him, and I too read him when I was 14, 15, Yoni, I read Naked Lunch, and this was the man on the planet that I wanted to meet. I wanted him to come to that conference. I picked him up at the airport. I had a flat tire. Nobody believes this, but he changed the flat tire on the way into Santa Fe, and I wanted to know what his relationship with women was before I really got to know this man. And so I said, well, what shall I call you, Mr. Burroughs? He said, call me William. I said, William, what is your attitude towards women? And he stared at me. We were out on a kind of walking out in the bush. And he said, I killed the only woman that I ever loved. And he started crying. And I held him. And he just sobbed. And he told me about that relationship. And that was 1974, and we only talked about that particular incident once in about 1980, but that was before his introduction to Queer, where he describes that incident, but it marked him.
You know, oddly enough, there's a moment in the documentary, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the documentary William S. Burroughs, A Man Within, which is opening this weekend at the CCA, where he says that this horrible thing that he could never live down and that he always regretted, namely shooting his wife, albeit by mistake, actually played a great role in his being a writer. How did that work?
Well, I think just like Kathleen was saying, I think, or as John Giorno says in the film, he has to fight his way out of, paper bag. I mean, you get that fine sense of, I make films and I work on things because I don't know if out of anger, but I feel stuck about something. I feel upset someone doesn't know about something, or when I have trouble, I think the whole idea of even anyone keeping a journal, you don't write in your journal, I feel happy today. Look how wonderful things are outside. you write about what your difficulties are. But I think if you're a brilliant person and you're writing, you know, your difficulties, it can turn into something amazing.
Kathleen, Burroughs was in New Mexico. He went to, what, boarding school here and was kicked out?
He wasn't technically kicked out, but yes, in 1929, when he was 15, he went to, what was it called, the Los Alamos Ranch School, and went there for about 3 years. That school later was taken over by the U.S. government, became the Los Alamos Laboratory. But he was very eager, when I met him in 1974, to come back to New Mexico, because in conversations at that time, he had very fond memories of New Mexico. He learned to shoot here. He made some cultural contact with Native American culture. He had his first drink in the La Fonda lobby, and he really harbored fond memories of New Mexico. So I'm quite honored to be speaking about him now, years later, and talking about your film, Yoni, because that was part of the personal side of William. And by the way, there's a section in the film that is filmed in New Mexico where he's shooting the artwork. He's doing some of his painting artwork where he practices on aerosol cans. That's taken with Stephen Lowe and his friend Wes in El Rito on a mesa there many years ago.
Well, and there is absolutely wonderful documentary footage and really great animations and music. The film itself is quite a work of art. Yoni Leiser is the filmmaker of the film William S. Burroughs, A Man Within. Once again, it's opening this Friday at 6 o'clock at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Kathleen Gray is a film and music producer, friend and associate of the late William Burroughs. I want to thank you both very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And Kathleen's doing a Q&A, right?
Yes, correct.
Kathleen will be doing a Q&A after the 6 o'clock screening.
Correct.
Excellent. We'll see you at the CCA. And by the way, the website over there is ccasantafe.org. The number is 982-1338. And the website for the film is burroughsthemovie.com. Thanks again for being with us.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.